So I'm pretty sure that it was sometime in the autumn of last year that I briefly talked about this one ceremony that we have in the monasteries regularly. The Japanese word for it is called Shosan, and another what English version of that is spiritual direction ceremony. And I'm remembering, well, many of you, I'm sure, when you were visiting Shasta Abbey years ago, or would get to partake in sort of listening to that ceremony. But it was at the end of morning service, one of the masters of the monastery, or if the abbot or abbess were around, they would go stand up at the altar and face the back of the hall, kind of with their, the altar to their back. And in turn, starting with the junior most monk, we would walk up to the master, the celebrant, and kneel in front of them and basically ask them a sort of the deepest spiritual question that we could in terms of what was boiling up in us, bubbling up in us. And we would, particularly as novices, this ceremony would happen every 2 weeks. So there was kind of this background of always being aware of looking at your deeper spiritual question. And I remember for quite a period of time as a novice monk that, with the ongoing meditation practice, the ongoing things that happened in the monastery in your day, things would just arise. And sort of new vistas would open or new areas would come to mind. And often what would come to my mind is, now what should I do? And so often I would bring the situation to this ceremony and ask the master. I basically tell them what was going on, and in essence I'd say, now what should I do? And so I wanted to bring that up as kind of a backdrop for the next thing I was going to mention, is that I did it last winter up at the Portland Priory when I was living there. And this winter I've come back to doing the same, and that is that I've, in my free time, I have gotten onto YouTube or gotten onto the internet and done a lot of reading and listening about the whole situation going on with climate change. And, as I've mentioned to all of you, I do have a background in the sciences, in the physical sciences. So I'm actually able to look at the more scientific aspects of climate change and understand what's being presented. But I've also, so I think from my point of view, it just feels good to keep kind of up to date and informed on what's going on, what the latest research and findings are showing. And I also try to keep up on not only the causes of climate change, but the effects that it's starting to have. And of course, those effects are very, very wide-ranging. And it's not my intent to, go into the details of any of that, any of the things I've been finding out on climate change, but more to just present that my sense is that over the next coming years, the next 5 to 10 years, and certainly for the remainder of my lifetime, and by implication, looking at all of you on average, sort of similar time frames. But things are already, as we well know, things are already quite serious. And over that time span, I was talking about things are, my sense is things are going to be getting, continually getting more serious in terms of just all of the effects that are going on. But I was struck by, and this is listening to interviews, I was struck by comments that a number of scientists, a number of researchers, a number of people who are specializing in various other areas, I was struck by their comments. They said that, they said there's going to be a lot more suffering going on in the future. And I think the thing that, that I'm noticing is the just the scale of what's going on, just the enormity of what we could call the problem. And so this is where I come back to what I started with about the spiritual direction ceremony, is that if I were in a monastery right now, I could see myself going up to the celebrant doing the ceremony and saying, now what do I do? So to me, though, what was interesting is the comments made by a few people about they anticipate a lot more suffering going on in the future, is that the clue to what to do now is their use of the word suffering. And we Buddhists, we're very familiar with the word suffering. We're very familiar with that being what the historical Buddha recognized 2,500 years ago, and what the whole emphasis of his teaching is based on is suffering. Now, I know that these interviews and these people using the word suffering, they were meaning it in a more common way, but nevertheless, it really does highlight how we can start going forward with this. And I wanted to offer just my perspective on this, kind of looking at climate change and all of the effects, all of the things that are going on and will continue to be going on through a Buddhist lens. I think that what I'm going to present here, some of the things I'm going to mention, kind of have a bit of a logic to their progression. But at the same time, I'm also kind of putting various things out on the table and not necessarily saying they need to be connected up the way I'm going to connect them up. But of course, a very good starting place is the law of impermanence, the fact that everything is always changing. And perhaps another way of presenting this is with Great Master Dogen's word uji, existence, time, flow. Just a slightly different way of presenting impermanence and that things are always changing. But then we can make that a little more specific. We can bring that a little bit more closer to home, which is that, and I'm going to draw it out here a little bit more broadly than the normal phrasing we hear. But that is, we've all heard the phrase paraphrased here, birth, youth, adulthood, middle age, old age, disease, and death. I think that covered all the different phases. The reality is that everything that is born eventually will die. And it comes to mind that in the things I've been looking at with climate change and the effects of climate change, it could be that, well, we've all heard about the Big Bang and the birth of the universe, but it could very well be that our civilizations, our world, our whole biosphere, Perhaps it's already diseased and dying. You know, and we've all basically heard that we're in the, what they're calling the sixth great mass extinction. So I think birth, old age, disease, and death, that's still true. That hasn't changed at all. Perhaps, though, it's writ very large in the sense of maybe our whole world is going through that right now. So I think taking it, you know, adding another aspect to this is that I think it's absolutely vital that we come to deepen our understanding, that we come to know that this thing we call me, it eventually comes to an end. So if you want to call the whole world the me, then we can very much see that it very well could be coming to an end also. And my impression is that because of the scale at which it's going on, it's pretty much there for all of us to see if we're willing to look. And although I'm kind of jumping over quite a few things, that quite a few hurdles that many of us encounter and hopefully pass through, but it's getting to the point of saying, yes, this is really happening. So I'm hoping in a way that the way I've been describing it there is, from my perspective, in part, the global situation, it's on a very, very massive scale, but it's no different than the things that we all go through as individuals and looking at our own trajectory of birth, old age, disease, and death. So what came to mind was, you know, the I don't know how far back the saying goes, probably quite a ways. Obviously, it came up before we had automobiles, it's my guess, but the one about you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. You can lead people in the direction of saying, look at the massiveness, the scale of what's going on in our world. You can, you know, kind of try to push their face in it. But as we well know, with our own individual situations, whether or not we're going to open our eyes more fully, whether or not we're going to see what's going on, remains to be seen. You know, and with my interactions with all of you over time and so on, I know that each of you looks at, interacts with, understands, and is deeply touched by different aspects of what you might call this whole global situation going on. There are very particular areas that really touch you deeply, affect you deeply, and so on. And within that, I think we're all aware of, we can see in these various areas, how much anger there might be that we have, how much sense of profound sadness or loss, despair, you know, sometimes very deep-seated fear, dare I even say horror? I certainly can say horror from my point of view in some cases. And then also I have to acknowledge, I would imagine it's true for many of you too, that there's this incredible yearning or longing for things to be different, for things to be better. And we all know in our practice that any of those feelings that are triggered, that are arising and so on, we very much need to open up to those, be present with those, allow ourselves to feel what's really there. But then what comes to mind is going to Rev. Master Jiyu's and Rev. Master Daizui's book, The Book of Life. And Rev. Master Jiyu has a section in there on the five laws of the universe that go, way, way back in terms of Buddhist history. And it was from a very ancient time, their understanding of five different aspects that describe the reality we live in, describe how these different aspects work and so on. And the first law of the universe, it specifically says the physical world is not answerable to my personal will. And I think what's particularly interesting about that, particularly the specific phrasing about the physical world, is that when we're talking about climate change and all of the effects that we're seeing, we're really talking about the physical, material things that are going on and that are leading to obviously very deep emotional and mental consequences. So why is the world in the situation it's in right now? And from my perspective, Buddhist perspective, I would contend that because of the unfolding of time over a couple millennia at least, but certainly over the last few centuries, and because of the effects by hundreds of thousands and millions of people, we're in the situation we're in right now because of primarily people acting on their greeds and their angers and their delusions. So again, it's just at this incredible scale of awful lot of greed and an awful lot of anger and aversion and an awful lot of delusion. And it's basically at the point where it's in every corner of the world where we can see those effects. And, you know, greed, anger, and delusion, that's what Buddhism has traditionally always called the three poisons. And it just struck me not too long ago, oh, the three poisons, how apt a phrasing when we see that basically the physical world we're living in, and more than just the physical world, has literally, it's being poisoned quite severely. So it's really important, particularly in the practice of Buddhism, to get this causal connection here. The physical world is not answerable to our personal will, but we've used our personal will to act on greed, anger, and delusion. And this is the world that we're in right now. I would like to say that for myself, generally speaking, I got the fact that acting on greed, anger, and delusion were not a good idea. I'm hoping that it will become more apparent to more people these days. But the really key thing is that the first law of the universe, this teaching of Buddhism, is saying the answer, i.e. the solution, is not to be found in your personal will. So in other words, your personal will is not going to solve the problem. So on the one hand, it's really important that we be very thankful and grateful to the Buddha for pointing this out to us. He's saying, guys, this is a dead end. It's a dead end with the emphasis on dead. This is a direction that is not going to end well. And this should actually come as a relief to all of us. It's like, oh, okay, that sign there is saying dead end. We don't have to bother with that. We can put that one down. But let me clarify this or kind of zoom in on this a little bit more. The way that's been phrased, it's the phrase personal will. And that's the key is that the problem is that we take things personally. In other words, we're stuck in, our center of gravity seems to keep coming back to this sense of a personal perspective, of being this separate, independent personhood. You know, and of course, that personal perspective, taking things personally, means that when we do that, automatically the world gets populated with other persons. And I know I'm coming at this from just a slightly different angle, but I won't go into them in detail right now, but the Four Noble Truths are basically saying suffering exists because we take things personally. It's because we take things personally and then we act personally. Now, what I was noticing is that, you know, when I kind of wrote these notes out and as I've been talking here, that what I've said so far, you could go to the Shishogi and track right through sort of the first half of the Shishogi and see that Great Master Dogen is saying the same things, slightly different words, slightly different emphasis, but he's going through the same progression there. So with the word personal and taking things personal, I would imagine each one of us at some point in our lives, probably some time ago for most of us, and I think your average person out on the street would say, well, what else is there besides taking things personally? And of course, one can regress to a what one might call a pre-personal state, which is, I will dump my will onto somebody else, some authority figure, and they'll tell me what to do. They'll figure it out. But probably best not to go backwards. So this, of course, is where the second part of my dedication comes up, where Soto Zen is part of the Mahayana school of Buddhism. And we have, you know, the Bodhisattva path. We have Avalokiteshvara, great compassion, she who hears the cries of the world. So in the midst of our awakening to, our becoming aware of some aspects of this climate change crisis, all that's unfolding with that, all of the social situations, all of the economic and political situations, our willingness to hear the cries of the world, even if in just some particular areas, that's already taking a step beyond the personal. That's already taking a step beyond taking things personally. You could say we're now willing to take things more than personally. And of course, the practice of meditation, the softening, the opening to what is, to what's present in our lives, the willingness to allow things to arise, to feel them, see them, understand them, but to neither hold on nor push them away. It's the greeds, it's the angers, it's the delusions that is kind of the bulk of our work in meditation and in our daily practice of trying not to push away, trying to see them fully for what they are, but also not acting on them. The three poisons of greed, anger, and delusion, those could be considered to be an alternate definition of what most of us identify with being who we are, you know, what our personhood is. It's the things that we grab onto and push away. But of course, the teaching again is that within the practice of the Bodhisattva path, the willingness to be with the world, the willingness to let go of greed, anger, and delusion, those over time get converted to compassion, love, and wisdom. It's the crossing over, the taking the next step beyond the personal. And then, of course, Great Master Dogen in the Shishogi talks about this as the four wisdoms: charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. So all of these things I've just been mentioning, they are entering into the world that is beyond the personal. To use a phrase that isn't too old, it's transpersonal. So I wanted to give just a few quotes, and these next two quotes are coming from Reverend Master Jiyu's translation and then Shohaku Okamura's translation in the Genjo Koan. And particularly, there's the phrase, let's see, let me get it here. Okay, this is from Zen is Eternal Life, Reverend Master Jiyu's translation. When we wish to teach and enlighten all things by ourselves, we are deluded. When all things teach and enlighten us, we are enlightened. When we wish to teach and enlighten all things personally, I think that would fit also, we are deluded. I think we could add in there, when we wish to do that, and when we do that, that's the cause of suffering. I don't think it's too far a step, too big a step to say that when we wish to teach and enlighten all things personally, that's what creates climate change. That's what creates the mess we're in right now. Okay, and then here's Shohaku Okamura's translation of those same sentences. I thought what's really nice is I'll read the sentence before that, which is quite, I think, quite relevant. And he says, you know, this, of course, is coming from Great Master Dogen. Therefore, flowers fall even though we love them. Weeds grow even though we dislike them. Conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. All things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. And just to add into there, conveying our greeds, angers, and delusions towards all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. His delusion is suffering. And as we convey those greed, angers, and delusions, they will cause nothing but suffering. All things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through us personally, through the self, is realization. I think what's interesting about that is that their will is still involved. There's a need for, you know, as is translated here, there's a need for the self to do things. There's a need for the self to act. But it's not acting from its own personal greed, angers, and delusions. It's acting from that which is coming from all things. It's acting from the situation that we find ourselves in. So I think kind of summing all of this up or bringing this together, our practice, one very significant aspect of our practice is allowing what's personal to get very quiet, to get very calm, to get very still. And within that, there's a very natural softening and opening up to the situation we're in, allowing it to inform us and then informing us being able to act within that situation. And of course, we have, again, a phrase that we use to describe this is that, you know, over time within our practice, we clarify, we get a deeper and deeper sense of what is good to do. So I wanted to finish off with one last quote, and this is from the scripture on the immeasurable life of the Tathagata, which most of us have sung quite often and are very familiar with. And I wanted to kind of paraphrase it, shift around a little bit some of the wording that's going on here. So let's see, jumping in here, it says, when sentient beings see at Kalpa's ending the raging fires consuming all, though sentient beings may see it as utterly consumed by fire, letting themselves be filled with grief and horror, distress and fear, tranquil will this realm of mine be. My pure land will not be destroyed. And then a little bit further on, the Buddha says, you who have intelligence and wit, do not let doubts arise in this regard, but sever them from yourself and bring them forever to an end. For the Buddha's words are true, not something that is empty and vain. So I think it's very apt, particularly on the West Coast these days, but actually it's becoming much more widespread. But the raging fires consuming all, I'm like, good grief, that's literal right now. But of course, the Buddha is meaning that, you know, even more deeply, even more fully. And then he's also talking about, yes, of course, we're going to be experiencing grief and horror, distress and fear. But he very specifically talks about being filled with it. Filled with it in the sense of, that's all there is. That's all you know. There's a difference between fully experiencing it and just sort of being completely filled with and saturated with it, in the sense of, you know, him saying that, you know, those who have intelligence and wit, to understand the fact that there's actually a cessation to suffering, there's actually something beyond just the personal. You know, he basically says, just keep doing the practice. And I think it's very clear in this scripture and in those quotes, he's really implying that we all come to a time when we realize that there are raging fires consuming all. It's just that, I guess the way I want to put it is that as a world community, we just haven't been getting it. So it literally has to be happening in front of our very eyes for us to start getting it. I guess the last thing I just wanted to touch on, and I think that, you know, what you brought up, Nancy, about Bev's situation and so on, is I want to encourage all of us to continue taking refuge in all of us as a community. I think that we've already been through almost a whole year of the coronavirus situation. And as much as our psyches would like to think it's going to get better, I have a feeling that if it gets better, there will be other things that will be filling in the gap, so to speak. And I think more than ever, there's a real need for us to, I guess what, you know, when Grey Master Dogen was asked by someone when he came back from China, what he basically got in China, you know, what did he acquire? What did he learn? He said, basically, I've come back with a strong and flexible mind. And I think things are going to be changing very much going forward. So reaching out, becoming more involved as a community is literally putting the step beyond the personal into practice. And it just makes more and more sense given the challenges that we'll continue to be facing, all of us. I was talking to a monk at Shasta about some of my stuff, listening to climate change and my views on it. And he said, "Oh, we're going to start calling you Reverend Doom." And I wasn't quick enough at the time, but I think doom is what you get when you identify with the personal. So I'm really looking at it. No, it says I'm really trying to be in the post-personal, the post-doom phase of life. So, but you gotta face the music first too, before you can really decide to take that next step. Okay, that's all I had to usher in the new year.